Good evening, warriors of all ages. Welcome to another edition of Warrior Connection. Well, hey, the spring is upon us. It's starting to get a lot of rain and warming up a little bit, but we're still chilly here in Illinois. We're going to continue our conversation that we began last week, dealing with the suicides and frustration of all of our vets across our nation. Hey, Ray, how are you today, sir?
Good, Doug. I hope you're doing good, too. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I mean, this all began for us some time ago, and we got a hell of a journey over the last few weeks or anything. We had the widow of a veteran that had committed suicide, and she joined us last week, and we had, an incredible conversation about all the stuff that led up to it, the total frustration her and her family felt, the total frustration her husband felt, and then he chose suicide. And along the way, you lost another good friend here in the last week, and we lost some other ones. We had another Vietnam veteran that had died, and he had died abandoned. What do you think is happening, Ray? I mean, the frustration level seems to be high. We've heard that the suicides are somewhere around 22 or 23 a day, but the informal, unofficial information claims that it's way higher than that, isn't it?
It is way higher than that. A lot of them go unreported, and most of them would be involved in the active duty, the reservist, and the National Guard worldwide. And for whatever reason, I think it would be so high, it would probably really be astounding. But there's a lot of things going on in their lives, too, Doug. It's been going on for a long time, but now it's starting to show up. And we've discussed many different reasons, but it incorporates a lot of things going on in these young men's lives and women's lives. And hopefully we can find some way to curb some of this.
We've got to do something. Here at the University of Illinois, and we both got involved in it, they're trying to do with the research study, and what they want to look at is whether meditation and mindfulness and all this stuff does anything to alleviate stress. Well, as we know, and you've taught it, and you've lived it, and it's a part of your book, and we've incorporated it into all of our preventive medicine lesson plans and everything, emergency response plans that we've done for years, it works great, except it's like drinking a beer or going out there for a nice glass of wine. It alleviates the stress for a few moments, and you feel extraordinarily good, and you might be able to get sleep for a little while or one night, but then you run back into the problems, and reality hits home again. The veteran can't get the medical care that they need. The caregiver is not included in the decisions on the medical care for the vet in problems, even when they have a power of attorney. And then the information is deliberately withheld from them on what has happened to them and why they need medical care. What else is happening? I mean, you're working with these brand new young kids that are coming on active duty. They're on active duty at Camp Lejeune, North Carolina.
Right.
What are you finding with these new kids?
Well, you know, yesterday I was at Camp Lejeune talking to a group of veterans coming back from Afghanistan. All of them, you know, I even asked them at one point, how many of you have been affected by the death of one of your friends? And every one of them raised their hands. Well, they're dealing with a lot of issues. They're coming back from a very exciting tour, more or less, of combat. And you come back to a very low-key things going around you. There's a shutting down process of coming back from excitement. And they're suddenly dealing with a lack of security, a lack of, you know, their friends, their loneliness, depression, isolation, and they become feeling like they're vulnerable to so many outside things. Then they deal with survivor's guilt, depression. They want to have a desire to be with their dead friends because they love them. They kind of, immoralize them, which most people do. And then they begin to make bad choices, trying to self-medicate themselves with entertainment and bad friends sometimes. That'll lead you into more substance problems, and then they, just do more and more substance, which has a very negative effect on them. But then, Doug, tomorrow I'm going to Camp Lejeune Hospital, Naval Hospital, and I'll be talking to groups of young Marines and sailors who have never been deployed, and most of these are young people who have lived a lot of traumatic lives before, and even now, they've even allowed it's a good thing, the social media, but now it's almost taken the place of families, where they lack families and maybe come up through dysfunctional families. Now they're relying upon social media and things like that, and they're being just getting deeper and deeper into it. But there's so many things that are affecting these young lives. And so, you know, I wrote about this, and also I've, you know, talked about it quite extensively to a lot of people. And like you, we're able to see things from the outside looking in sometimes, and it becomes a little clearer to us as the things that are affecting them. And it is causing a lot of suicide. Right now at Wounded Warrior Hospital, Camp Lejeune, I've heard where they had 52 young men and women on suicide watch. Throughout the bases, if you go into mental health programs like I've been able to do and privileged to do, you see a lot of mental anguish, and you see young people dealing with things they've never had to deal before. And it's really taken a toll on their lives.
I don't think these... When the enlistment all changed and they started bringing in a different cross-section of society, we started seeing more and more people joining the military to get the benefits, get the education, and get the experience, and find a family because they didn't have one. And it seems that they came in without the tools to deal with the stress of combat, all the changes in their life. They lacked the education in comparison to what we started out before. And then when they come back, because of their physiological injuries, and we'll call psychological impairment, and then not mental illness at all, it's a psychological impairment from a moral injury.
That's true.
They're having a nightmare trying to learn and participate in normal activities in society, I think.
I think it's a breakdown that they're experiencing. They came in thinking it was going to be a family-oriented kind of thing, and then you get in, and you find out it's not. They have many problems, you know, your friends do. But one of the problems that we see is that the military has always been highly disciplined, and it's always been kind of a, at least given the front of being a very moral, you know, operation or, you know, organization. And when you get in, and today's military is being subjected to a lot of dysfunction and a lot of lifestyles that are promiscuous. And what they've done was they've opened up the military to kind of the mindfulness of sexuality in the military structure. Well, it's always produced breakdowns in morals, morale, and unit cohesion, and now they're allowing it to come in. And usually with a lifestyle that is very, promiscuous, they have a high rate of suicide within those communities. And so when you're opening up to different sects of societies and you're bringing people in that already have a high rate of suicide, it always runs the numbers up in the organization they're joining up with. So it's just part of the numbers thing. It's part of the suicide thing. It comes through a lot of sexual immorality, and now the military is getting deeper and deeper and deeper in those things.
The brand new Army Times issue for this week had the main story is the fact that they want to bring drill sergeants back into advanced individual training like they had in basic training. I mean, all of us going back to years and years ago, remember what the drill sergeant was. He's legendary for discipline and cohesion and everything together. There is no leeway. This is the way it's going to be done. And if you don't like it, well, this is the way it's going to be done, period, end of story. No changes. And now they're reporting that in AIT, they're having so much problem with disciplines that they want to bring the drill sergeant up to the level as a schoolmaster, as a principal for individuals going to class. I mean, it indicates something seriously wrong.
Well, you know, one time in the military, and I guess I don't know if you still have it or not, the Marine Corps was the last to really do anything with this, is that soldiers in boot camp carried a card in their pocket that said, "You're stressing me out." And if somebody was hollering or screaming at them, they would pull the card out, and the drill instructor, whoever, would have to back off. Well, these kids have been raised in homes of a high rate of divorce. A lot of these that came out of Vietnam, we came back home, and we had enjoyed the lifestyles of promiscuity, more or less, of living for yourself. And then you come home and you join up with a young lady or a young man, and you get married, and you're thinking you're going to be normal, but you bring that lifestyle with you, and then suddenly when it ended up in divorce because they couldn't live together, with that kind of lifestyles and substance abuse, And then the children that were born in that marriage were suddenly torn apart from the people they loved. They watched them fight, and they watched them drink, and they watched them do drugs and other things. And now they're separated, and the child usually is pushed back and forth, and they become almost like extra baggage and a pawn sometimes. And then the spouse, you know, whoever, the parent, say for instance, a lady that left her husband and took the kids with her. Well, that's understandable. It was a bad lifestyle. But now the guy is lonely, and now he's still doing drugs and alcohol, but he wants to marry again, so he marries another woman. And it goes, it's like multiple times these Vietnam veterans, we got into this stuff. And, Doug, I don't know if any of them ever pulled out of it, because I know two Vietnam veterans have been married 9 times, and I know other ones that have been married 5, 6, 7. I'm not criticizing people who get married and divorced. That's not, I've actually been there, and I understand how things happen. But to replicate that over and over again without fixing yourself, it's a recipe for disaster in any relationship you're going to have. You have to get yourself fixed at some time. But the kids were raised up in that dysfunction, began to grow up, and they went through a lot of torment by people living with people they didn't know or they didn't like and didn't like them. And it also created a lot of lack of discipline. Because they began to fight back. You know, you tell them to do something. They don't want to do it. And you're not my daddy, or you're not my mama, and all this kind of stuff. And so it just creates more and more problems. Today, those young people coming into the military have grown up without any discipline. Most time they were bought off. Well, you do this, and I'll buy you something. You go into the military, it's a whole other world. It's full of discipline. And you do what they say, or there's consequences. They're not used to that kind of thing. And so they're having to learn as an adult what they should have learned as a child, is that you have to obey rules. And a lot of them have a hard time adapting to that. The divorce rate with Vietnam veterans, some statistics say, are 94%. It's a little misleading because it may be 70 or 80% of them that have been multiple marriages. The other ones, the other 20 or maybe 30% have had marriages that lasted. And so those children grew up and they went to the Gulf War like their parent did. And then they came back from the same dysfunctions, and they began to replicate everything their parents had done. And they began to marry and divorce and marry and divorce. The divorce rate with Gulf War veterans is 90%. So what you're doing is you're having more trouble in the marriages, more divorces, more children being raised up in that dysfunction. And they say today, and I know this for a fact, a lot of these guys come into the military, some of them probably don't even know who their parents and grandparents were because it's been such a mixed match of people. But they're coming in this, into the military today with the same signs of post-traumatic stress as the guys coming back from Afghanistan. And it's because they've been raised in a battlefield. That's amazing.
We're seeing the nightmare. So now we got these individuals. We put them into a combat situation.
Yeah.
We got Vietnam, the Vietnam veteran, those of us went to Vietnam and went on. I mean, both of you know, you and I were in Nam.
Yeah.
And we bought into the myth, and then we did everything we did. We can't change what we did. We were involved in combat. We killed, destroyed, and maimed, and we can't change that. And it was either them or us, so there was no options here. But then you find out over the years that instead of growing and coming back and getting an education and going forward, seems like so many of these veterans are stuck in neutral.
I think a lot of them, and we understand this too quite often, people feel abandoned. They were abandoned as a child, abandoned as a young person, abandoned when they came into the military, and they kind of joined the military as a family, as a substitute family. But then when they get in there, they feel abandoned again. And so they began to do a lot of substance and different things. Today, they allow them to drink in their barracks, a six-pack a night if you're 21 years old, or a pint of liquor if you're a certain rank. And so what they're doing, instead of fixing the problem, they began to even compound the problem. And we see it all the time. The moral injury has a big deal to do with human nature and the mental health of a human person or a person. And you and I both have talked a great deal about moral injury. And if you really look at what morals are, or it has to do with a conscience, what is a conscience? if you look into the conscience, it is a ability to know right and wrong. And if you look into that real deeply, you'll find yourself over in the Bible, in the book of Exodus, where that God gave us 10 commandments. The first four of those commandments have to do with our relationship to God, who he is, and has to do with worshiping him and respecting him. But the next six of them, number 5 through 10, they have to do with our relationship with each other. You know, honor your father and mother. Do not kill unjustifiably, because God did make provision for law enforcement and military and things like that. But don't commit adultery. Don't steal. Don't lie. Don't bear false witness. And do not covet or be greedy. Well, they were natural laws that we're born with, those natural laws inside of us. And if you were to go into the Amazon and see a tribe of people down there, you'd find out they have internal laws that they, you know, strictly keep. And those laws are the same exact things. Don't lie. Don't steal. Don't commit adultery. Don't do all the bear false witness. Don't be greedy and honor your parents. They're natural laws. Nobody ever told those people that. It's just a natural law within you. And when you have those things broken, or if you have someone to do something to you, or you're forced to do something you know is wrong, and in the military that does happen a lot, you begin to have what they call a guilty conscience or a bad conscience. It wounds you because you've broken one of those internal laws within you of don't bear false witness. And you, Doug, you know that very well, because you were forced to do things as a major in the Army that you would have not really wanted to do, and you were forced to do it because of your rank and because where you were and your status. And now you come out with a wounded conscience. It hurts, and it makes you feel dirty or bad or guilty. And you're trying every way you can to right the wrong right now.
We heard that loud and clear last week with Mandy Jo, because she said that her husband chose suicide because he didn't think God loved him or God wanted him anymore. He didn't see any role for himself in society, given what he had done and what he was involved in and what he had lived and what he had seen.
That's true.
And he didn't have that path out. And that was what Paul, too, when Paul Lyons committed suicide, his children were affected by the contamination that he brought back. His wife was sick. He couldn't get the proper care that he asked for. I mean, the abandonment of those that are responsible for our care, I mean, once they abandon us and deny any correlation between all the incredible health effects and hide the information, that poor warrior and that poor family member, that spouse is trying, the children are trying to survive, have no outs because they don't understand what happened to them and what needs to be done because the information is deliberately withheld from them.
It is. You have to live with yourself at the end of the day. And I've always, for a long time now, I've tried to live by the policy of trying to do what's right, because I got to live with myself at the end of the day. And when I lay down at night, I have to try to go through my head and try not to do people wrong and things. And that has to do with a conscience or morality or the Ten Commandments, really, because they cannot be separated, those three things. But the transgression many times comes from individual acts of commission or omission. You allow it to, or you do it, by individually acting out the transgression itself, or by behavior of others, or by bearing false witness to intense suffering or grotesque aftermath of the battle. You get to see the results of what has taken place, and people will minimize what took place. Well, don't worry about it. But you begin to see the evidence of what has happened, and you begin to see that grotesque aftermath of what has taken place. The hundreds of thousands of veterans from the Gulf War now are suffering from this thing. And a lot of people will run into the darkness because you don't want to have to admit that. You don't want to have to admit what's happened. But there's people like you, Doug, that have realized that some of the stuff that was done had long-term effects on people. And you're watching the grotesque aftermath of the battles are way beyond comparison even of the battles in the Gulf War. But it really hurts your heart and your conscience to feel like you were wounded in that. You feel like you were part of that problem. And now you're trying to correct it, and you're trying to get information on these young guys, or not young anymore, really, the Gulf War veterans, of saying there is help, but you're going to have to seek out the help. You're going to have to go and try to get all the help you can. The VA, they're slow moving, you know. But I know it's very irritating to you, and you're dealing with it all the time. And I deal with my own problems, so with a moral injury thing. But it can be fixed, I believe.
These individuals have gone to combat and gone to war, and you and I have got way too many friends on the Vietnam Wall. We've got too many that we lost in Desert Storm. A lot of my team members have died now directly as related to their exposures and injuries in combat. And these kids, they got that why did I survive thing, why me, and I want to go back with my friends. And then they hit the wall on this moral injury thing where how do I justify the loss of Bob? How do I justify the loss of Sue? How do I justify that I came back and my children are sick? Or how do I justify that my wife is sick?
I don't know if you can justify it because it was unjustified what happened to us. And there's no justification for it many times. I think that's part of the moral injury for all of us, is that you find out what you did was honorable. Yes, it was. I mean, you served your country. But the thing itself, the war itself, was probably unjustifiable. There was no call to even have it. It was a lot of things in America, the jobs and productivity and things like that were driving. That's why they stay at war for so long, because it's good for the economy. But it's bad for lives, and that's part of the hurting part. There is a remedy for moral injury, and I don't think many people are hearing about it, but maybe we can talk about it in a minute.
Well, when we look at the risk factors for suicide and everything, I mean, definitely you got physical illnesses and injuries, mental disorders. We've got substance abuse disorders. That substance abuse, obviously, is alcohol and street drugs. We're seeing incredible levels of substance abuse for prescribed medications. We've got incredible barriers to getting access to health care. I mean, we heard that again last week, and I heard that over the last week from the Vietnam veteran who died, his widow. You've got a stigma associated with seeking help. I mean, the strength of a war is I can do it on my own, you know, the old suck up and march on type thing.
That's right.
You know, sometimes you can't suck up and march on. Easy access to anything that they find, and, you know, and if a person makes the decision they're going to do it, it doesn't matter. They're going to do it. And then you've got all the cultural religious beliefs that just create a nightmare.
Well, you know, we talked before, Doug, that we think, the VA is really like searching for anything and everything to bring solutions to your problems, and they break it down to 1,000 different things, and so they put 1,000 different Band-Aids on you. But it doesn't heal the problem. It doesn't heal the cancer inside. Therapy is good, and medication is good, but you can't medicate a person and make them better. All it does is make them not feel the pain. And so some medications or some things like blood pressure medicine and all, it probably works great. But as far as giving a person alcohol or drugs to get rid of the pain does nothing for the cancer. It just gets worse and worse and worse. And somewhere they have to be able to find some real answers for people to give them some peace and happiness. That they deserve it more than anybody else in this world. They fought for their own countries. And so their country kind of abandons them and just sticks a Band-Aid on them of little things. We're talking about mindful meditation. We're talking about therapy. We talk about a lot of things the VA does for it. But if you do everything they want to do, you'd be at the VA every day getting medication or getting some kind of therapy. There's some things that can be fixed. But you have to understand what has happened, and then you have to take the path to fix that.
It goes to that conscious choice again. I mean, we've talked about it ad nauseum on this program. You teach it. It's in your book. Is you've got to choose who you're going to be around.
Exactly.
You got to choose what you're going to be involved in. You have to choose how you're going to live your life. You have to choose your life, what you're going to dedicate your life to. And then you just got to do it. I mean, as you keep
right.
saying, if you keep living in the rearview mirror, you're not going to be any place. Yeah, we use the rearview mirror to correct things that we've done before and charge forward.
But that's true.
It seems like sometimes, so many are stuck. They're in the rearview mirror and they can't go forward.
Well, you know, the rearview mirror is like looking through an album of pictures. It's happy days, it's fun times, it's things happen. Yeah, there was tragedy. But we all like to look in the rearview mirror sometimes, and what we do is we avoid the present and the future by dwelling on the past. And there was a saying that said, we've always heard it, but if you forget your past, you're destined to repeat it. But there's another one that says, if you dwell on your past, it will rob your future. Because when you're sitting there dwelling on the past, looking to an album, you forget about cutting the grass. You forget about eating lunch or something. You forget about all these things that you need to be doing, and you're just dwelling on the past. Well, looking at the past is good. I mean, we all go back and we see where we've been and everything. But, Doug, when you began to focus on the past all the time and look in that rearview mirror, you can't drive. You can't drive a car. You can't go forward. You can't do anything because you're so focused on the past that it blocks your vision. And so what we have to do is realize the past is there. And I love the past. I love those guys I knew. That was probably one of the highlights of my life, was being around some of these guys, even though it was combat. There was a really close camaraderie, and we watched for each other, and it was secure and all these things. But there comes a point in time where you have to take that rearview mirror and put it like in a car. You put it up there to your right-hand side, so you can glance backwards once in a while and see where you've been and maybe learn some things along the way that you won't repeat it anymore. But you have to get your vision on the end of the road or down the end of the road, because that's the safest place for you to be. You can move forward into your dreams. You can move forward into your aspirations. You can move forward into your future, even though the past will be there. But you glance at it, but don't stare at it, because it will get you wrecked.
Well, these individuals are coming back, and you're talking about they feel like the walls are around them, and we've heard that over and over again, and all of us have felt the wall that's around us.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the key thing is you got to come out. Obviously, you got to ask for your medical care and get that identified. The big problem we're running into across this nation, and it's now become an ongoing tragedy and travesty, is neither the VA or the Department of Defense wants to provide medical care as needed to all of the millions of vets that are affected and their family members. Or when they give the care, they limit the care to, well, I'll make you feel good right now, but I'm not doing anything to really resolve the problem.
That's right.
And then then the individual says, well, I've got to go back to school. Well, they've got memory problems. They've got mobility problems. So learning and involvement in school is going to be difficult. They have income problems because they can't get a good job, or they have so many outside influence and so many bills that they can't get ahead of themselves.
It becomes a wall. You take
that wall is huge for them.
Well, it's impenetrable, too, because you can't get around this thing. And what I do when I speak to, like, mental health groups at Camp Lejeune and such, I draw a picture of a stick man on the board, and then I put a line at the bottom of him, and I said, all of these problems that you're experiencing right now, with the emotional problems, with your past, with the medications, whatever you name it, it creates a wall. And so I draw a wall around him, and I shade it in to the point that it has the man almost where you can't see him, and it's like you're behind the wall, and it's hard to get over the wall. But this is what I show him. I said, there comes a point in time where I draw a line between yesterday and today, and you take one step forward to making a conscious decision, I want to get better. And when you do that, I extend the guy's feet about an inch, and I make a foot on both of them. And it appears as though the guy is now standing in front of the wall rather than the wall standing in front of him. And it's almost like a breath of fresh air. You can see their eyes change when I do that, because it's like, wow. And I said, what do you want to do? Today is the first day of the rest of your life. You're like 23 years old. You got a past, but you got a future too. And you'll never know what you can accomplish until you start moving forward. I tell them, do not avoid big obstacles, because big obstacles always hide big opportunities. You don't get to do the opportunity unless you go through the big or go past the big obstacle. And Doug, it is working. You tell them that the only difference between them and the people they admire are the choices they make. You began to make the same choices that the people you admire made, and you may end up being the one that they admire, and you began to move forward. They do have to choose their friends more wisely, because a lot of our problems, Doug, came from choosing the wrong friends, people without any motivation, people without any future, people without any goals or any dreams, and we camped out where we were. And so if you can just get the idea, I want to go back to school, okay? I want to study something, whatever your goal may be or your whatever you go for, you're going to hang around people in that same the same type of classes you're going to be taking, and you're going to have to involve yourself with them. They'll help you study. You help each other. You begin to prepare yourself for tests coming up and things. If you hang around the wrong crowd, they're going to pull you down. You're not going to be able to make grades to stay in that class. But if you have a goal, if you got something you want to achieve, you're going to have to surround yourself by positive people and not with people who are prone to substance abuse. Because if they're prone to addiction, that means they're using it. And anybody who uses it is prone to get worse, to abuse. And so you have to make better decisions. And I asked them this, Doug. I said, would you want your children hanging around the kind of people you hang around? No. They always say no. I said, do you want your spouse hanging around people like you hang around? No. I said, the point is, why are you hanging around them? They're not doing anything for you. They're keeping you back. And people say, well, you know, I don't want to lose my friends. And I said, you don't have to. You make one conscious decision that you want to do things better in your life, and I promise you, you won't have to lose your friends. Your friends will lose you because you began to walk out another direction at a higher plane, at a higher level, and you began to work out your dream, and it does make a difference.
This belonging to the group or ownership or being in one group has driven the military and all of the warriors forever and ever and ever. I mean, the warrior hangs together, sticks together, and everything else. But within the warriors, some understand what's happened, and others don't understand what's happened. And then you get to the general public, and the warrior expects the general public to provide the support and force the political things that exist to take care of them and provide them what they need based on their needs. And then we see that the general public doesn't want to know, or they don't want to be involved, or they don't want to take the step because of the fact they're afraid of the repercussions, either politically or economically. How do we break the cycle like that?
Well, when you came home, and I came home, I know what happened to me, but Doug, when you came home, you went back to school. But what if happened if you came back and suddenly people were telling you you had a mental illness, you developed it in Vietnam, and now all you can do in life is hope that you'll live, and you just have to make the best of what you have. You can't move forward. It's okay. I mean, it's honorable, and you sit right here, and I'm going to give you something to make you feel better. What would have happened to Doug, Rocky? You would have sat down on the beach and just let them do it. But, you know, the point of that is that you cannot wait for the VA or anybody else to fix you. You're going to have to do it yourself if it gets done. You have to take the motivation of saying, I appreciate what you're trying to do for me, but I got another deal. I got a dream I'm going to go pursue. And you begin to move out.
You know, the impossible dream is not really impossible. All it is reaching out and achieving it, isn't it?
Well, wasn't every dream unachievable until you started moving toward it? You know, it's like Disney. Walt Disney actually quit high school, and he was a dropout and all this other stuff. But he had a dream, and so he began to move for his dream. And he hung around the right people. He made friendships. He began to move up, and people began to come with him. And they got the same dream, and suddenly everybody's moving forward. And here comes Disney World. You know, it's like Disneyland, actually. But, you know, it starts out with a dream, with a hope. And a lot of these young warriors have lost hope. And they've been told, okay. This is who you are. This is what has happened. And this is what's going to happen to you in the future. And they get rid of all the hope and all the dreams and all the things that this guy really wanted to do. I know a guy that had growing up in life, his father called him stupid. I mean, so many times, that's what he called him over and over. When I talked with Bill today, Bill actually was an electrician at one of the bases. And Bill's always been very good at his job. But in his conversation with talking to Bill, he'll always bring it up. He'll say, Ray, I know you think I'm stupid when I tell you this. And I've always said, Bill, quit saying that. Quit saying that. And sometimes we get molded into positions in life because we feel like, well, that's who I am. That's what I am. I can't do anything else. But you have to get that first conscious decision. Regardless of what has happened in my past, I don't have to let it control my future. I'm going to try, even if I fail. I'm going to try. And then you begin to move forward. And you have to come away from the crowd. Don't expect all of your friends to go along with you because they've been told the same thing as you have. They'll say, well, you're going to fail. And you'll say, well, big deal, I'll fail. And so, they'll try to get you to drop out on your dream. And those guys will end up working for you, actually. So you have to get up and go and follow your dream, whatever it might be.
It seems so often, I mean, everybody is totally capable of learning. The only thing that you don't know how to do is what you haven't been taught or what you haven't learned or what you haven't tried.
Yeah.
And so it's obviously everybody can charge forward, and they've just got to make that decision to do it. And, yeah, it's going to be difficult. I mean, if you're going to come out and you're going to go to trade school, it's going to be hard.
That's right. You're going
to have to spend a lot of hours studying. If you're going back to junior college, you're going to be involved with individuals, and you're going to learn things that are going to disrupt your old train of thought. I mean, one thing that I learned when I got into college in 1971, right out of Vietnam, is what I had learned from my participation in Nam and what they were teaching in school sometimes was completely different. What I was told as a part of the military versus what the reality was completely different. So now you're sitting there struggling with what is reality and what did I learn, what do I know, and how do I apply that to make everything better?
I really believe, and I'm not sure if I have this right, but it says necessity is the father of invention, I think it says it. Where you see things that people need, people want, and there's nothing, anything out there, or maybe you can improve on it, and you begin to get a vision of something. I know in my bakery, I had a lot of people coming in that bakery. It's close to the Marine bases, and so there were a lot of Marines coming in there wanting a bride and groom to go on top of a wedding cake. Well, they didn't have anything on the market really worth anything back then, like 30 years ago, 25 years ago. And so I always loved art, so my wife asked me could I kind of decorate one to make it look that way. Well, these are plastic. They're made of plastic. So I began to look at, I worked on one, and then I thought, wow, this could be good. So I started looking around for a particular couple I could use, and they were about 6 inches tall and about 4.5 inches in diameter, and they were dancing. And Wilton Corporation made that couple, and so I bought a couple, and I broke it apart, and the guy had a tuxedo on, so I took a Dremel tool, and I shaved it all off of him, and I created a uniform. And then I hand-painted it. It took me about a year to really perfect this thing, but I began to do something that was very needful. And it was a market for it, and then I learned how to do them like all the way back to World War II with a uniform, with a chevron, the World War II. And then I started making the medals and the ribbons on the guy by painting, and there was a whole process that I did for that. But I could duplicate every ribbon, every medal, every award that guy had on that uniform, hair color, the eye color, the flower for the girl, all this kind of stuff. I sold those in 46 different countries before I gave it up and retired. It comes, and look, I could make $80 an hour doing those things. That was pretty good, that was really good. So you fill a niche. Everybody has an idea, and sometimes the idea pans out and sometimes it doesn't. But it comes through, I tell them this, Doug. I said, quit looking down at the dirt and start looking at the sky, and the world will look better, and you'll quit bumping into things. And it's about looking at yourself and say, look, this is not life. This is not what I signed up for. I do not have a mental illness. I do not have this. I'm not going to sit here on the beach the rest of my life waiting for life to show up. I'm going to get up and do something. And you follow your dream, and it'll be good before it ends up.
we heard the last few weeks in our conversations on this radio program where the spouses gave up and the veteran gave up. And then the tragedy afterwards of those people that are left is just mind-boggling. How do we get resources? And again, this has to go back to the Department of Defense, has to go back to the VA or maybe local groups. How can we mobilize resources to help these veterans? Because it seems too often that they might help them and make them feel good. Well, we'll have an ice cream social or something. When it comes down to, okay, who's going out to cut that kid's lawn? Who's going out to move them from one location to another? Who's going to take them to their medical appointments? Well, it seems too often the guys that could do it now are running the other way.
Well, that's true. You know, what I found, I told you about an experience I had. I got lost in the woods one day out hunting many, many years ago. No cell phones, nothing, you know, no GPSs and all this stuff. I got lost. I got all turned around. It was getting late in the afternoon. I found myself totally, absolutely lost. There was a lot of leaves on the ground in this area, so I had no idea what direction I came in. And then I just found myself rambling through the woods trying to get out of this place within a couple hours because it was dark. And if you get hurt, you're in major trouble. But I got to a point where I had to stop. And so I stopped. I closed my eyes. I breathed real deeply. I don't even know where I learned to do that, but it came natural. And I started breathing real deeply, and I kept thinking, calm down, because I was panicking. And then after a few seconds, maybe 30 seconds or a minute, I calmed down, and I started thinking. I thought, how am I getting out of these woods? And the thought came to me, Doug. It was like, well, the deer are back here, and they use trails to go back and forth to the bean fields. So just go through the woods, ramble through, look for a deer trail, find a deer trail, get on it, walk it out. And that's what I did. About, half an hour, hour later, I walked through the woods. I came across a little deer trail going through the woods, and I got on it and walked it out to the bean field. I was out of the woods. There's times in life you have to stop, breathe, sit down, calm down, breathe in your nose. They call it a 6, 7, or 8 or something, where you breathe in for 6 seconds. You hold it for 3, 4 seconds, hold it in, and then you exhale it through your mouth. And what you're doing is getting oxygen to your brain, which helps to calm you down and get oxygen to your blood, and your brain begins to function normal. Then when you're panicking, it really starts to shut down on you. And so for lack of oxygen. And so you begin to normalize, but you're able to think clearly for a little bit. And then you think, how am I getting out of this mess? Now, one thing you can do, Doug, if you have questions, you've got a radio program. Yes. Doug, how did you get here? Well, how do you get to doing what you're doing? And I replicate some of the things you're doing. And hopefully where I've experienced some things in life, that can be replicated. So what you do is I have a website called theneverendingwar.com. And if you go on that website, it has a lot of information about things that I've found and done and replicated to help me gain more ground and begin to move forward. But the first part is you've got to get your head straight. You've got to think. You've got to think clearly, and then you have to ask questions. And just don't, you know, when somebody tells you something and it doesn't sound right, well, keep asking. Keep going somewhere else. And find something that really makes sense and follow some of the paths that have been in those woods, because we've lived through the dark woods of post-traumatic stress, Doug. I've been totally lost in those woods. But, Doug, I found a way out of those woods, and if they'll follow me, I'll lead them out just like you lead them out.
Yeah, we've got a whole bunch of us. I mean, there's an incredible group out there that are leading everybody.
Yeah.
And then there's others that are holding people back, because that belonging to the group where you're with the whole buddies, you come home from work and you're going to pull out a six-pack of beer or pull out the whiskey bottle.
Yeah, right.
Or you're not going to have a proper diet. You're not going to sit down with your family and have a meal. Or you're not getting involved and take things and do things with your kids or your grandkids. I mean, these are all things that you can do where you can all of a sudden really have a good time. Find something you're involved in, whether it's community theater or working at your local library or working for a political entity, whatever it is. And right now, it seems like the political presidential situation is completely turned away, and total turmoil, but Senator Cruz dropped out again, I guess, yesterday or last night.
Yeah. Right. Well, Doug, one of the things about it, you're talking about, at night, you got to live with yourself kind of thing. Just think over the past day and think of the things that made you feel bad and the things that made you feel good and look at it a conscious thing. And you began to analyze, well, I did that and I feel like crummy. And so you abandon that thing. And then you start kind of living by your conscience and trying to do things right, trying to do things better. You want to do what's right. I tell these guys in the military, I tell them the only thing I really tell them about it, about religion is, because I am a chaplain, but I tell them the best home improvement you can do for your family or for yourself is to go to church. Why? Well, there's a lot of good reasons. Sometimes that's the best place where a lot of good people do show up. Now, a lot of bad people show up, too. They're trying to fit in. But that's a good place to start where you can find a lot of good, positive people that have got their lives together, their heads together. Not everybody, but you have to kind of do like the orange test, where you, or the apple at the grocery store. You smell it, you feel of it, you look at it, all these aids. And then if it looks bad, you put it back. If it feels bad, you put it back. If it smells bad, you put it back. And then you find somebody else. But you have to find better people to invest in your life, and you can invest in theirs because you have to learn from them. And then you move forward. And I always say they have good food there. They have good fellowship there. They have good teachings on character and discipline and these things. And who do you want your children hanging around? Good people? Or do you want them hanging around, something on television or got their head in a cell phone somewhere? You've got to go back to the beginning, and you got to figure out how to do this thing. Everything on the Internet is not good. I mean, there's some good in there, but there's a lot of bad stuff. And they're going to suck your children right into this kind of stuff if you're not careful. You have to make sure your children is getting good teachings on morality and the conscience and things like that. And church is a good place to go. It really is. And so you start there. God gave me peace and forgiveness and that I needed for moral injury, and I need it through life itself. And I think He has helped me to be a better father, a better friend, a better veteran, a better everything I've tried to do, businessman and owner and all these things. But He has added so much to my life, and I know if it works for me, it works for other people. And you know the same thing, too, because it's been in your life. But all we do is just teach them where we've been and what we've done, Doug. And as an example, well, you say, well, I think I could do it better than you. Well, I wish you would. I hope you will. And I'll help you. I'll pray for you. So I would love for them to do it better than we do it.
All these kids, when they look at involvement, they come back and they're in the young military or even some of the older ones. They're going to hang out at a bar or they're going to go out there and do something like that. But instead, they can get involved in all the different activities, whether it's a library, a community theater, whether it's your church, whether it's a political campaign. Local government, get involved as a teacher or a sub or working with the kids in schools or the sports. These are all things where you can take all this incredible knowledge and skills that everybody's developed and really use them for the betterment of everybody. And the same thing, you're going to be hanging around good people.
And that's the point of what
I saw happen right after Vietnam and everybody, when they're coming back and they were going out and they're hanging at the bar. And they were drinking. And they were drinking and they're drinking and drinking. And then their family life fell apart. Their job opportunities fell apart. They couldn't get an education. And it just turned into a spiral that went straight down to oblivion. And I think that's what's happened today, isn't it?
Well, you look at it and you think, well, what's the difference there? Well, people that were taken, it was about me. I want to do about me. I want to be happy. I don't care about anybody else. And you began to make a lot of bad decisions because you become introverted and you become focused on your own self. The happiest people in this world are people who care about people. And when you go into clubs or you go in, I'm talking about good clubs, when you go into libraries, when you go into churches, it becomes not about you anymore. It becomes about other people. You began to treat them the way you want to be treated. You began to put things in their lives and began to add to their lives and teach them what you've learned. And, Doug, that gets your eyes off your own self. Sometimes we get to the point when someone gets depressed, it they began to not look out, they began to look in, and it shuts you down, and it stops you from moving forward. I wrote some things about moral injury, and moral injury covers a lot of things. I was just going to say something. Moral injury really is, can happen in several ways, but moral injury can be defined as perpetuating, failing to prevent, bearing witness to, or learning about acts of, that transgresses deeply held moral beliefs and expectations on you. And therefore, it begins to stop you from moving forward. And what I found about God is not my enemy. He's actually my friend. He is not a crutch for wounded people or he's not a crutch for weak people. He's actually a stretcher for the wounded and dying, which I was part of that. And I began to learn that God did care about me. And my life really began when I went to him with all this package and baggage and moral injury and all these things in my life. And I just simply said, God, I can't do this thing. And so I asked him forgiveness of what I'd done all those years, especially in Vietnam. And you say, wow, you have to name everything? No, I just put it in a bag and gave it to him. And I said, God, have mercy on my soul. And God did. And he took that guilt out of me. Even though the memories are there, I don't hold the guilt anymore. It's called justification, just as if I hadn't done it. You can't go back and redo it. Don't you wish you'd go back and tell those people to take those papers and sign them themselves or something? But no, we hurt ourselves so often, and God says, bring it to me. God's in the business of fixing, you know, broken hearts and broken lives and all these things. And so we go to him, and he fixes it. And he says, you're forgiven. And that starts you out on a new pathway. And this way, you get to start over again. I've heard it before where a child will be drawing on a piece of paper and mess it up. And they take it to the parent, and the parent says, oh, you messed it up. And he's like, yeah. He crumbles it up and throws it in a wastebasket and gives him a fresh sheet and says, try it again. And that's where we get a new lease on life. That's where we start over again. And God is very good about that kind of stuff. I had a guy ask me, we're talking to him one time, Doug, and he said he didn't believe in God. And I said, you don't? He said, no. I said, you really don't? He said, I don't believe in that junk. I said, well, why don't you look up and just say, God, if you're real, prove it to me. I want to know. And the guy said, I'm not going to say that. I said, why not? He said, I'm just not going to say that. I said, you do believe, and you're afraid he's going to slap the taste out of your mouth. I said, no, that's not true, because God does want you to ask him. If you quit asking people if there is a God, and look up and just ask him yourself. If it's God, if he's there, he'll answer. If not, don't worry about it. And it solves a lot of problems in another world, in the spiritual world, that we can't get fixed in this real world that we're living in.
You know, that comes back to it, pain control, all this other thing, everything up. I mean, the spirit and the spiritual entity is where it's all surrounding. Because if you can come at peace with yourself, with everything what you've been involved in, then the medications can work. But the thing, and again, we've heard over and over again, and what bothers us and what bothers me, is the deliberate hiding of the information in the documents. I mean, the most famous one is the Vision 11 Clinician's Guide on Gulf War Illness, where it specifies for DU and traumatic brain injury and anthrax and all these things that else that we took, the actual health effects involved with all this stuff. And yet the VA sees it upon themselves to hide that from the veteran and the family member, and often actually hides it from the physician or the nurse providing care. And that frustration for me is the utmost, because they know and they make a conscious decision to not to help the veteran. I mean, it goes back to the Los Alamos memo we talked about involved with my guy when I got the DU project from General Schwarzkopf. Lie in a report to avoid all responsibility and ensure the continued use of this weapon.
Yeah. Well, you know, Doug, if you were going to a doctor and he were to hide information from you that could save your life, you wouldn't appreciate that very much. And you would call for his license to be pulled from him. And I think a lot of things that you and Denise and others are doing are trying to make people have to answer for their actions. It's okay. I mean, a person does something bad and then he covers it up. That's normal. That's natural. But there's coming a time when you have to face yourself. there's some things in life you can live with, but you can't die with it. Well, the older we get, the closer we get to dying, and that, they always say a deathbed confession is where the last thing they do is confess they were wrong or confess they did something. But you don't have to wait that long. Man, they could fix this thing real quick if they would just come out and say, yes, Doug, I told you that. Yes, it was wrong. I was misled just like you were. I was just passing orders. Wouldn't it help a great deal if people just got honest about this deal and just let's get it fixed instead of covering it up?
I think that's really where the end is, isn't it? I mean, what we've talked about and the losses we've had, I mean, I've lost two good friends we buried in the last few weeks. Yeah, they were older, but they had incredible influence on me. They were my bosses when we put this all together. You just buried a young man, tragically lost in a car accident. And we've had over suicides and veterans giving up and getting sick and dying. Right. And that's going to be a day-in and day-out thing, but it's still going forward, making the choice to go forward, to grow and to expand and participate.
Yeah. You know, one of the popular words in our day in Vietnam, Doug, was wasted. We talked about people wasting somebody or people wasting or something like that. It was talking about void. It was talking about useless. And what we want to make these veterans understand is, that word wasted does not apply to them because it was a word being misused, really. You don't have to waste your life. When my young friend died the other day, he was like 23 years old, and it was almost like really reminiscent to my friends in combat dying. And the only word you could stamp on it was like wasted, wasted life, wasted future, wasted everything, because he went out before his time. And it hurts, and it breaks your heart. And when you remember it, it hurts your heart. But to these guys today, I hope they understand they've got a life. And if they will pursue it, if they will begin to move forward, make one conscious decision, I want to get better, and I'll do whatever I have to do to get better. And then ask God. He's a friend. Ask him to help you. And then begin to move on, looking for good things. If it's bad for you and your family, abandon it. Let go of it. Go make another conscious decision. I quit drinking one night after years of drinking heavy by looking around me, and I thought, what am I doing? I don't even like these people. I put that beer down, and I walked out, and I never drank again. It's been over 35 years because I made one conscious decision that night to try to start doing better, and that's where it begins.
Well, I quit drinking because I realized it wasn't good in any place, and I had to still do what I wanted to do before I got ready to go drinking, and after I came back, all I was doing was paying to pee.
You know, I heard Donald Trump say that he's never drank a drop of alcohol in his life. He had a brother that died from alcoholism. But he does make alcohol. He owns distilleries that make alcohol. He doesn't drink alcohol because it has an effect on the human brain. It begins to burn brain cells, and it also shuts down things. He does not want to be a businessman with a brain that has been affected by anything outside because he can't think clearly. And if people just understand that you cannot move through life not thinking clearly. Somebody with a clear brain is going to take advantage of you. And, although he pushes it and sells it to people, he doesn't use it himself. And I don't think that's a good thing, really. He made a lot of money doing it, too.
I think we're coming to closure, is Ray. Thank you again. It's been an important conversation.
Thank you, Doug.
Next week, we're going to continue on with the Congressionally Directed Medical Research Program Directors, and we'll be doing that for the next few weeks. Ray, thank you. God bless you. Ladies and gentlemen,
you too.
It's time to make the decision to go forward. Get an education, get involved in good things, choose your friends, choose your activities, and we can thrive, can't we, Ray?
Yes, we can. We can. We have a good life, actually. For us and our families. Thank you, Doug.
Again, your website is
www.theneverendingwar.com.
Thank you, Ray. God bless you. Thank you.